Yo, what is up, guys? See a couple of you guys are here. Let's get this started.
Public Yemeni number one.
What's up, dorks? What is crackin'? There's actually a lot more people watching right now than I thought would be watching. I'm glad to have you guys here. My guest today is Heather Williams. She's the general manager of House of Comedy. She's been in the comedy game for a really long time. She is super cool. Got to talk to her this weekend during the Big Pine Comedy Festival, and she was just like so deep and introspective and kind of like a comedy shaman sort of. And I don't know, I was just impressed out of all the people that I could get on. I remember she said something to me the first night we were hanging out, and it was one of those poignant things where I woke up in the morning and I was still thinking about it. And I was like, I got to get her on the podcast. So guys, put your hands together for Heather Williams.
How you doing? Hey. How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Just want to make sure. Speak again.
Hi.
Yeah, let me probably get you up a little bit more. Check, check. Cool. All right. Sweet. What's up, Heather?
Oh, I can hear that better actually now.
Yeah, yeah. Much better, right?
Yes. Yeah, I almost don't know where to look, so I'll just kind of look at you. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right.
That's what it's supposed to be. Usually, I don't have this thing. The guests will never see this because it's in front of me.
All right,
it's kind of distracting. So.
Yeah, that's better.
Better?
Yeah. I don't need to look at myself talking to you because I'm like, what am I doing?
And it's not supposed to be like that.
All right.
Guys, we're in like the closet right now of the House of Comedy.
House of Comedy. This is our awesome green room slash supply closet. So,
Yeah. Are you still in the shot? Yeah, good. You're still in the shot.
Okay. As I dip out. So quite a weekend. I mean, quite a week.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, I want to say I feel like I got hit by a 2x4. So I'm a little bit like coming back from Shane Gillis was here last weekend. And he had 2 sold out shows. And then we had the comedy festival. And it's hard not to get in the crazy minutia of it all and to stay present, you know?
Yeah.
Because
usually you would just have a break right now, right?
Yes.
So you would have like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off.
Yeah, but I fly during the week, so I'm a little nutty.
Who do you fly with?
I don't like to talk about it because I don't like to bring that into this, you know?
Okay.
Just because I feel like it's 2 separate things. Are you cool with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things where it's like comedy and flying like feel really separate.
Okay.
And the airline right now is just so constricted with the way that they're doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things where I kind of like, you know, flying to me was more of practicing my coaching. So it's not even like me being a flight attendant. It was more of like, this is an opportunity for me to take my coaching that I've kind of accumulated over the past 15, 20 years.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because last night we were talking about, you know, your journey into healing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you started off in the comedy game.
Yeah.
At the Tacoma, right?
At the Tempe.
Sorry, Tacoma.
I was like, Tacoma.
I always think Tempe and Tacoma. I'm so stupid.
I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
No. At the Tempe Improv, and then you started rising up the ranks of, like, managing these places, right?
Well, what happened is that, like everybody that I talked to, I was going to college. Like, I'm from New Jersey, and I went over to Arizona State University because I wanted sunshine. I wanted to have fun. I couldn't stand the rain all the time. I wanted to be up. So a friend of mine, we were either going to go to UCLA or ASU, and we ended up at ASU. And I loved school, but I was always doing school for everyone else. Like, I was, you know, I'm pretty good at math. Like, I'm really good at math. And so I was almost going after, like, I want to say business classes and kind of doing it for the parents and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had such a love of performing because I was always like a performer as a kid, dancing and doing all that kind of stuff. And I just, every time like we sat down and watched movies with my family, the magic of like the transformation of a movie and something about the entertainment business, and both my brothers are musicians. Mm-hmm. So we're all very creative like that. So I got really sick in college. I got toxic mold poisoning, and I was in a very bad car accident that knocked all of my cervicals out of place, and I didn't know what was going on, and my body just started shutting down.
The mold and the
both.
Thing
it was like, the it was literally like the universe was going, we're smacking you out of your head. We're smacking, because I was like a really smart kid, and it was like, you got one life to live, and we're smacking you out of what you think you already know about the world.
Wow.
And I had to kind of like, now I couldn't utilize my brain as my strong point, as I already know this answer and I already know this. So really? It was like I had to come.
It affected your thinking like that.
Oh, I couldn't. Those couple years in that time, I remember my kindergarten teacher. Like I remember all the stuff that I have a really good memory of, like my entire life. But during that period of time, it just is like a huge blur. And I had to go. I had to go home to my. I had to drop out of all my classes and go home to my parents' house. And I literally slept for an entire year.
So you were kind of disabled for a minute.
Oh, I was completely disabled.
And like your brain was probably, was it like rattled to where like you weren't able to interface with the world?
Yeah, it was so weird because you know how we're talking like this. We take for granted that I'm already in the the conversation goes like this. It's like a figure eight flow.
Sure.
Well, back then I had to sit there. Somebody would say something to me, and I'd have to go, he just said, bah, 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 bah. And by the time I got it out, it was like the person was already on. If you ever talk to somebody who has special needs, they're super slow because they're processing everything, you know, slowly.
Sure.
And we really take for granted that we just kind of just riff with people, you know, that it just is like this, you know, and to have that experience, it was like, wow, this is, and I just felt worthless. Like I felt so... like what am I in life if I'm not my smarts and my brain and my, you know, what am I?
Sure.
So it was really kind of a knock into introspection, really. And then it was
how old were you?
I was 22, right around that time.
And were you managing any clubs then?
No, I wasn't even, that was kind of like the catalyst. I was going to college. I was at ASU.
Got
so,
it.
And that was the catalyst to really sit with myself and go, cause it really made me feel like my body was breaking down. Like I felt like, I don't know how long I have on this planet. You know, it was like one of those.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So it was a moment of like, well, if I'm going to leave this planet early, let me go out with a bet. Let me do what I want to do. Let me not try to get some kind of degree or something to impress, which I could have. I mean, my dad wanted me to take over his company at one point. He has a company in New York City, and I had to really sit with it and go, do I want to picture my life crunching the train and go to the New York City and, you know, do that whole grind for the money? And I was like, that's not what I'm doing.
It made you probably look at time in your 20s like an older person.
Well, yeah, it absolutely did. It sped up the entire process.
It expedited it.
Of awareness. It's it was just really like, you know, because I remember I was actually on my way to an acting class when I got in that car accident. And I was trying to like go through traffic, and this woman, you know, wasn't paying attention. And I saw it coming. So I had to like, you know, jack my arms up and watch the whole thing.
Which made
it
worse.
And it was way worse. And it just not, and it was like, and the thing that happened after that is that I felt like that I could die at any minute. You know, like the feeling of somebody crashing into you and you seeing the whole thing and you not being able to do anything about it. It's such an element of your sitting duck in the world. So it really goes back to survival, and it goes back to like, oh my God, something could just come out of nowhere and just take me out like that, you know? So for a very long period of time, I actually lived my life in a very, very scared space, a very fear-based space of like something could just like take me out, you know?
Like a little PTSD.
A huge amount of PTSD. I actually have had the opportunity to heal it, so, which is pretty fantastic. It's kind of a funny story, but anyway, so... after getting sick, I went home to my parents' house and just said, I'm gonna go after my dreams, which is to be in the entertainment business. I really wanted to be a performer. I wanted to act. I wanted to dance. You know, I was young, but my body wasn't allowing me to do that. So I said, I'm gonna go back out to Arizona. I'm gonna continue taking classes, and I'm gonna get a job at probably a comedy club to see if I can learn the whole business. And just learn, because I wanted to learn the business. I didn't want to go over to LA and just be like, oh, what am I doing? You know?
You wanted to learn the business because were you at a point where you were like, maybe I'm not going to be able to perform? So then that way you thought about being involved in that way? Because you said that you were thinking of managing a comedy club, right?
That that was not even on the radar. Oh, all I wanted to do was go get a job within the entertainment business and learn as much as I could. And what happened is I got a job at the Improv, and that was kind of magical because I had put my application in. They didn't call me for a month later, and I was about to get another job. And they called me the night that I was about to go for another job. And I went in, and my life completely changed because
how nice is that?
That's what I call kismet. You know, it's like kismet. Everything's have happened to me in my lifetime.
Kismet.
It's almost like when you know that something else is guiding you and something else is helping. Something else is helping you along the way. Like this is meant to be.
Right,
you know,
right.
And now this happens a lot to me, and I get signs all the time about like you're on the right path and just keep going. This is the right thing.
Do you ever notice that? Like what? I notice that
all the time.
I don't know if it's our archaic pattern recognition ape brain that we have. Do you know?
Yeah.
Or is it something divine? But sometimes I can sense when good patterns are arising.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like you almost can see it in the matrix. It's almost
completely.
It'll start, something will happen where you're like, oh, that was a surprise. And that's a domino effect. And actually, something else comes in that's just so miraculous. You're like, how did these things happen? And,
You
know, now I'm in a much better place because of it. But at the same time, I kind of sensed it was coming.
Yeah. And the funny thing is the best thing about those moments is taking any kind of judgment or any kind of like, whatever you think should happen, because a lot of people stop those moments from happening because they have an agenda of what should happen instead of just being in the moment and allowing. It's kind of like this whole interview. You know, we just decided to do this, last night or the night before?
Sure.
And I was supposed to be in Dallas today. So it's like, and I even said to you, I said, well, maybe I'm supposed to do this podcast. So I was like, okay. So then it was like, let's make it happen. So
yeah.
So that's kind of being in the moment of like the bigger picture of what, you know, it's almost like I know what my soul wants to do in this world and I just don't know how it navigates. And so the best thing about my little self is to kind of step aside and allow like the magic to happen and stop getting in the way.
Sure.
Because that's what we tend to do. We're like, oh, this isn't the right way it needs to happen, or this is not the way it's supposed to look and stuff like that.
Maybe the multiverse theory is real.
No, completely.
That there are a myriad versions of you.
Who knows?
Doing a myriad of all the different options that you probably would have or wouldn't have done.
That is another mind-blowing experience to consider, for sure.
Because I've been reading this book called The Hidden Reality by Brian Greene, who's a quantum physicist. And
I love that stuff,
breaking down the science behind why there's possibility that your consciousness resides infinitely in so many slivers of time.
Yeah. And I know, I was going to say, that's another whole thing that we could open up definitely at another time, but it is definitely something to consider. But even in being in this moment, it's like the moment changes constantly and it's really about being in the moment. And even going back to getting the job at the Improv and it changing everything, it was the one time when I first started working there, it was the one time in my life, it always seemed like I was wanting to be somewhere else. And I remember one time in the back of the room at the Tempe Improv, and I was like, I don't want to be anywhere else but this moment. And it was like mind-blowing for me because I was somebody who was always like, ooh, that looks good over there. Ooh, that looks good over there.
Sure.
You know? And ooh, I want to do that. And oh, I'm not complete yet. And oh, I'm not, you know, fulfilled yet.
And then you became somebody who was like very cognizant about how you want to spend your time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was fleeting. It wasn't always in the moment because it was like, oh, I still have these dreams, you know, so you jump out.
Sure.
But there was definite times where I was like, I'm exactly where I need to be right now. And comedy to me is love. I mean, I grew up in a very funny family, but there was also a lot of pain. My mom was an alcoholic. So I became an adult at a very young age because I was the second oldest of five kids. And so I was kind of like the mini mom and like, how can I help her and stuff like that. And being a kid of somebody who has substance abuse problems, you really have to like solve your own problems, and you just grow up so quickly, and that was to my detriment, like as a young person, because I thought I knew everything, you know, because you're like, I know everything, right? And not even that, but yes, I pay taxes. You're like, I pay taxes, I should know everything, but you just think you know everything, and then you find out like. later, you're like, I don't know. You just don't know anything.
The more you know, the more you don't know.
Yeah.
No, you don't know.
Yeah. And you just kind of like track back as to the non-knowing. But yeah, the improv was magic. It was just magic. I mean, there's so many things I could write an entire book about. I was there for 12 years. Wow. On and off from 96. I was there from 96 to 99. I had my son in 98, and he is actually in the business too. So it's just like he grew up at the Tempe Improv, and now he's over there right now. So
it's running it.
No, he's only 23, so he's the sound guy and the photographer and everything.
Right on.
It's like
he's not a comedian.
He would like to be, but he's too hard on himself right now. So,
Yeah.
He's like, you know, he's in the beginning of like.
He's in the exploring. Dark ages.
Yes. he's in the beginning of the exploration, you know, because right. like we talked about the other night is right. when you do comedy, you really have to get very vulnerable.
Sure. Well, yeah.
Very.
I mean, just getting on stage already.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to be ready for people to just like you or not like you, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And try to be okay with it, too. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I'm really good being like, fuck you guys.
Yeah,
sometimes I'm just like, oh, I needed I'm it hurt. Today. I needed a cuddle. So like then you left the comedy world for a minute.
Yeah. So I kind of went up the ranks and I was at the top of my game, and my mom was sober for 15 years. So I really got an opportunity to have this beautiful relationship with my mom as a sober person.
Nice.
But in the last 5 years of her life, she started drinking again. Cause like, I think five different things happened. Her sister passed away from cancer within 1 year, who was like her rock, and like my aunts passed away, and she divorced my father, and she moved out to Arizona. And she's a very big family person, but she, you know, Jersey tends to be, my mom was like this, like, loves everyone, wants to say hi to everyone, talk to everybody, the sweetest lady. And the reason she drank was because she couldn't take the pain and judgment of life. Like, she had to check out of that. She was such a sensitive soul, you know?
Sure.
And you just saw it, and it was, you know, Irish and all that kind of stuff. So she just was like, I don't know how to handle this. And that was her crutch, you know, to check out. And so during the last 5 years of her life, I was running the club, and she was, and I was a single mom at the time. So it was just like, it was one of those, like, I mean, the world was giving me the challenges up the wazoo.
You were spread thin.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So she, in 2008, she was in the hospital dying, and there was a moment that, I had to decide between, I want to say the ego space of the comedy world and like what I'm supposed to do in this moment, because I loved comedy, and it was like the whole staff was like my family. I mean, still to this day, they're all in the business still, and they're doing amazing. My whole staff that was over there with me. And, I was in the hospital parking lot, and I remember eating it was almost comical, because I was eating a salad. And I just started bawling, crying, and the salad's coming out of my face. And I'm just like, I'm waiting for my sister to fly in, because my mom was literally supposed to pass that night. And that's another whole story for another time, but that's a pretty interesting story. Because I found her when she was like borderline life and death, and I had to drive her like frantically to the hospital. And it could be like a after school movie or something. But I was in the hospital, and I just went, I think I need to leave, because the club at the time was very, was using almost my mom's passing as like the weekly tabloid, you know, like OK Magazine or
sure.
as like they're, you know, this is what's happening now. Heather's mom's in the hospital. And it was like a moment of like, nope, that's not the way it's going to be. And I just had to just cut it, you know? So people at the club, there's certain, I don't want to go into it, but certain people at the club were like, you know, calling me all the time. Even we weren't even close, you know, and it was like, it was just was weird. It was not genuine. And I just said, I need to take a beat, and I need to be totally here for myself and my family. And every one of my friends said the same thing.
So in that moment, mm-hmm. I just want to make sure we're good and see if we got any questions.
People come.
Jason Bacon said, whoa, sexy gym time. It looks like a gym locker.
Oh my God, it's so sad.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Just want to make sure we're still okay. Good.
All right.
Yeah, we good? Yeah. All right. So in that moment, you got like thrusted back down to reality again, didn't you?
Yeah. Because I was like, it's like, when you're, I was like almost like a celebrity at the Improv because I would like ran it. I did the press. Sure. I hung out with all the comics, which I love. And that part of the business is so amazing, but it also can be, you know, fame and stuff is just very fleeting. You know, it's just, it's mm-hmm. this whole thing of, even, you know, at times when you feel like you're, I want to say I, the shit, you know, are you, you know what I'm saying? Like, are yes. you really? So it was really a moment of like, but at the yeah, well, I'm just saying, I feel more the shit now because I don't care about that stuff anymore. Sure. Back sure. then, it was almost like, well, I'm gonna just lose all of this.
Yeah.
But it was like, this is what is matters to me. My mother's life and my family and everything is everything to me.
But then you saw the fakery in the.
That's why I was like, I'm done. It was like a light switch. It was just like click, and. Meanwhile, still love all the people that I worked with. They reached out to me. The ones that were like my family and, sure, you know, like sure. there was a big
But you chunk saw of you saw another side of it.
Yes. And it really was only a couple. It was like one of the guys who ran it, which was, he was very ego oriented. And that was kind of what it was. And that's like another, that's like a, I basically was the manager underneath a boss who was very ego oriented.
Sure.
So, and that's where, and I was running everything. And I was still running everything while my mom was passing away in the hospital. And it was kind of like, I'm done, yeah. like doing it. I mean, because he basically took all the credit all the time, which was fine because I did it for the love of comedy. I sure. really didn't care about that.
Sure.
But it was like at the moment where I was like, I'm no longer doing this for you.
Yeah.
It's time that I put all my energy into my family because I'd been doing it for 12 years.
And yourself.
Yes. And myself, which I didn't get that at the time. That was nothing for myself at that time. Like I was.
You're spread thin.
It was the beginning of the dark night of the soul for me, basically, right after my mom died. So, wow. And that's why I needed to go through what I went through. And for the first couple of years after she passed, I did these really big, amazing things. Like I did a whole comedy charity event series at the W in Scottsdale. And I had all these amazing headliners like headline it and got written up in the paper and all this kind of stuff. And meanwhile, the whole time I'm like, what am I doing? I'm like running from this like dark monster of trauma. So I was like running down the
street. With more work
yeah.
and more accolades.
Well, I was running from the pain right. by doing all that nonsense.
It was your mom's way of drinking, but this was
just, it's exactly what it was. Yeah.
It's a little bit more healthier. Though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it wasn't because I almost died doing it. Honestly, my body was shutting down very, very much. So.
Yeah, I think I read in your bio, you said you end up getting like really like some type of exhaustion, like you were like diagnosed with something?
Chronic fatigue. Yeah. Yeah. To the point of, because of the misalignment of the spine and then the toxic mold, my body literally just was like, I'm not working anymore. And it was like, you know, it was a sense of exhaustion that you can never even feel with lack of sleep.
It's was this like, happening while you were working at
oh,
the
yeah.
clubs?
Oh, yeah.
So this exhaustion thing and this mold thing was accumulating this whole time.
Well, the mold, it was something that I was, to be honest with you, the laughter kind of saved me. So being at the comedy club helped me and my body to be present for a lot of it. But I never gave myself the opportunity to heal. And so after I left the Improv is when I needed to heal. After I did like the W event and then worked for a publicity firm, I finally just went, I'm done. And I'm done for right now. I'm going to go. I literally went back to New Jersey and did the same thing I did years ago and just pretty much slept for an entire year. Like
again.
I was like, again. Yeah. Because the thing with me, and I never got it. The thing with me is like, I want to do so much, but when you're, and this is for people out there that like have this, I want to say their soul inside of them wants to do all this stuff, but their body doesn't allow it, you know? And then they make their body wrong for
sure.
being.
They're not listening to their body.
Yeah. And they don't do any self-care and they sure. don't do any like.
Any relaxation.
Yeah, exactly. And
go
so.
Go shopping for yourself.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I did that. Oh, that. I did shopping therapy all the time. That wasn't a problem.
I'm just saying like anything yeah. nice, just do something for yourself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, but then it was time for me to just sit and be still.
Is that when you found out that you had a problem? When you started sitting still?
No, I knew the whole time.
The whole time you knew you had that mold toxicity?
Oh, no. I was sick the whole entire time. I was going to doctor after doctor. Nobody could
figure this mold yeah. thing out?
Yep. And that's why I had to be, that's why I became a holistic wellness practitioner, because I had to find the answers. And that's what I've been doing. That's what I was doing for the time after I left the Improv and after running after that. I started getting really quiet. And I started listening and I started allowing information to come in to help me. And then I started getting certifications and everything that showed up. So theta healing, kinesiology, this modality called access consciousness, neuroemotional technique, EFT. I mean, I don't know if any of your listeners know energy work, because, you know, sickness is really not only the body. The body is the effect of all of your thoughts and your emotions and what you hold inside. And that's what shows up on the outside.
It manifests as these things that we have problems with.
Yeah. Because I never allowed myself to get well, because I didn't think that maybe I wasn't worthy, or maybe I wasn't valuable enough, or I didn't think I could do it, or, you know, that kind of thing. So
I have this herniated disc in my neck now.
Yeah.
And it is it's pushing up against a nerve.
Okay.
The nerve is pushing up against a bone spur. So it's like perfect. It's like a
perfect storm.
Perfect torture system. Just perfect. I'm not sleeping well. I might have to get surgery on this thing. But the funny thing is, I'm very in tune with my body in terms of my health.
Yeah.
During the daytime, nothing happens. I don't feel anything.
Okay. Right?
Typically when I'm sleeping, right, on the side, that's when it wakes me up at night and stuff.
Yeah.
Now this has become an alarm system for my health.
That's interesting. So, to get you to pay attention?
Or so if I'm stressing out,
mm-hmm. That's where it goes.
If I'm stressing out, mm-hmm. All of a sudden this thing starts radiating and I start getting the tingling things on my arm. Mm-hmm. And then if I breathe, mm-hmm. It starts to go away a little bit. And it's really interesting, because it's like everyone always said, stress affects you, right? Mm-hmm. When you're younger, sometimes you really don't, you know, those little light stresses or whatever is really nothing. Mm-hmm. And even now, if I have a stress is coming, I deal with it. But this thing here is kind of like letting me know, just, hey, man, it's affecting you. Yep. It's affecting you so much that your inflammation is going up, and now this thing is starting to flame up. And that, just to me, it's just weird. It's just crazy.
It's almost like the way that I felt like whenever my body would shut down, it was my higher self telling me, you are not paying attention to yourself. Like, this happens to me still, like with the self-care is one of the toughest things for me, because I want to do everything. And I'm like, come on, body, let's go, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really had to turn it around and start really loving this vessel that is I'm walking around with. And
it's the only one you got.
Where I just came from was an upper cervical specialist, which is really funny that you have exactly what's, and this particular doctor saved my life. So it's something I'll tell you about, but, after the car accident, I lived with it for 20 years. And the thing is when you have something that's impeding up in your upper cervicals, whether your atlas is out of place or one of your C's are out of place.
It is C6, C7.
Okay. So basically what it does is it pushes against the cords that run through your body. So your spinal mm-hmm. fluid and all the different energy systems and meridian systems and everything.
You're going to depress me right
now. No, I'm not.
I already know. I can feel it.
But you should really look at it as it could be something that changes everything for you. And the thing is we don't go and get that help until we're ready to allow that trigger to be gone. Because it's almost like sometimes we
keep... You just broke my brain.
I know. Okay. So sometimes we keep sicknesses to keep us on... You just said that particular thing was the thing that triggered you into paying attention to your body. So if you didn't have that...
No, I've always paid attention to my body. Always.
Yeah. But do you know what I'm saying? Like
this is kind of had me realizing another level.
Okay.
Another level.
Right.
That I was not really cognizant of.
Right.
So then now when this thing goes off, I'm like, you know what? You're right. I am stressed.
And it's a really reminder.
Funny. It's like, it's just poking you. It's just like, hey man, you gotta, you think you're that strong, but you're not.
But if you knew somebody could fix that, would you be like, yes, let's go do that.
Yeah, I need to sleep, man.
All right. Oh, it'll change your life, honestly. And we'll talk about it after the show. But
okay, good.
It's something that is...
I hope so. I need to figure something out.
4 years ago, I found one in New Jersey, and I happened to open up one of these natural awakening magazines, or, you know, the natural magazines that they have at, like, the doctor's office or whatever?
No.
Okay. Anyway, it's like this little paper magazine that has, like, all these naturopathic, like, doctors and stuff.
Okay.
And I read this article from this guy, and I was actually in New Jersey, and he's one of the foremost upper cervical specialists, is Dr. Larry R. Biteman. And Marlboro, New Jersey, and he changed everything. Like, it changed, because when I was flying, I would go to Denver, and it would take me 2 or 3 days to navigate the altitude in Denver, because my atlas was was crooked and sideways. So it was pushing up against all the spinal fluid. And so like when you're in a different altitude, you're just like, whoa. So as you move that and straighten it out and make it, and this could happen from any kind of accident. It can happen from any kind of like sports injury. And he was actually, a professional soccer player, and he was in major pain and had migraines and all this kind of stuff. And it changed his life. So he became the chiropractor. And fast forward to literally 3 weeks ago, I knew I was out again, like my neck. And I was looking everywhere in Scottsdale to find somebody that worked like he did. And I just started energy testing it and figuring out, like, kind of feeling into, like, who should I go see? Randomly pick this doctor in South Scottsdale. Go in 2 weeks ago and just still cracks me up when I think about it. Walk in, and he trained under the guy in New Jersey.
Hey, how awesome is that?
And it's one of his best friends. And I just went,
that's
stop.
Great.
You know, so, yeah.
I just want to make sure nobody's texting me. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, yes. You're good. You're good.
Because I know, like, Willie's going to come pick me up. I just want to make sure he's not texting me.
Okay. Yeah, what is our time frame so I know?
We got about 30 minutes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. What is it, a chiropractor? Is he like aligning?
So it's different from a traditional chiropractor, because the thing was, is I had all these, all these x-rays and everything done on my back, and nobody could find anything. So this particular, it's an upper cervical specialist, and they do this very light, they don't crack you, they don't do anything like that. They do a very light manipulation to retrain your upper cervicals into realigning. And they do it so you have to do like a couple of, you have to do a bunch of sessions in a row just to, because your body, when your body's out, it stays out, and your muscles, you get a pinched nerves and your muscles are all kind of jacked up. And when they realign it, everything goes back into order, but your body's so used to being in that other position, you have to retrain it into staying. But it's a very light maneuver, and it's just the upper cervicals. And what happens is when you adjust that, the rest of the spine just goes, and the whole body just goes. Because I used to have pain in my right hip, and when I got that done, gone.
I need to figure something
Everything's
out.
Everything's connected. Man. Everything, the whole body's connected.
I've never had sleeping problems till just now.
You need to.
And it's really pissing me off.
You need to. Yeah, I'll give you the website.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's good to know.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So that's another part of this whole wellness journey. But
so let's just go back to like your journey of like now becoming this person that's like so aware of like all these different healing practices. Mm-hmm. Did you start doing it to help people, or did you start doing it because you wanted to help yourself first?
Well, that's actually a really
check. I'm sorry.
You got it?
Yeah. 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 Just trying to, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That is a really, really great question. And it was always for me first. And then once I really started healing me, it became so much easier to help other people. And I think that's such a message in society today about taking care of self first so that we can give out to other people, because we have it so backwards. We're always wanting to help everybody else. And that was my problem. Like, I actually wrote a chapter about it in a book with 40 other, I don't know, I think it's 20 to 30 other women. And this was the conversation we had about the divine feminine, but I wrote a chapter about self-love, and I never knew, like, because you always think of like self-care or paying attention to self as like selfish. People are like, oh, you're not thinking of other people, you're thinking of only you or whatever. And I recommend that all people think of them first, and not a selfish way, but a self-love way. And once you do that, you can actually, you have, it's almost like you fill your own pitcher, and then you can actually give out of the overflow.
Sure.
But you can't give to anyone out of nothing. And so people in society are just giving out of nothing, which causes resentment.
What's an example of giving out of nothing?
So say I have a bank account and I have $5,000, and somebody comes up and says, I need to borrow $4,500. You're wanting to give them, you want to give them 40, and you're like, here. Well, you're going to chase that person around forever to get that $4,500 back, because you barely have any money. If you have $1 million and somebody says, hey, can I borrow $4,500?
Sure,
take it. And you don't even, you're like, oh, give it back to me when you can. You know the difference between the feeling of abundance, where I have so much to give, take a little bit of what I have. And that's how I maneuver like flying. Like, I try to fill myself up before flying, and then I just give out the whole time. And then I know now to self-care afterwards. Because if I don't self-care, then I can't give it out.
Yeah.
So that's like such a huge point that I would love for people to get, because people are so, I don't know, people think doing stuff for yourself is, because they've all learned that it's selfish, especially women, you know?
Like, really?
Like, yeah, it's just a, it's, it, it is a woman thing. My mom was always like, I have to do this for so-and-so, and I have to do this, and I have an appointment over here, and I can't say no, and, you know, that's where, how I grew up.
My mom was like that.
Yeah, spread completely thin.
We left the house, and then she forgot how to cook.
Because she wasn't giving it to you guys? Is that what it was? Or what do you mean?
So, yeah, her health just started depleting because she was eating like shit, because she was eating out all the time. She was getting delivery, eating all this fatty food with preservatives, getting migraines. It was just like we had to train her to be like, yo, you need to take those skills that you fed us with and do it for yourself. She had that old Middle Eastern mother.
That's the mom thing.
It was so funny. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, you can cook
for yourself.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay. It was, so, I couldn't believe that.
Believe me. One of the biggest lessons two of the biggest lessons was self-love and letting go. Yeah. Honestly, those are two, like, you know, stop controlling your situation.
Oh, well, is a good phrase.
Oh, well. Yeah.
I hate to say it. You know, sometimes it's just like you have to be just like.
Oh, I do that a lot.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. I actually go, what am I supposed to get from this? Like, so if this happens, I'm like, this is happening. And it's kind of out of what I thought was going to happen. And so I just sit with it and go, wonder what this is for, what this brings.
You know? What am I going to learn from this?
Totally.
What can I learn from this?
Yeah. Like, I don't look at things anymore.
Number
as
one,
good
stop
or bad.
Talking to that piece of shit.
Number two, stop talking to that piece of shit.
Stop talking to the other piece of shit that he hangs out with.
That's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I think being aware of what is in your life and what you need to cut out and know what you need to learn from, that's so important.
Yeah.
And to be able to care for yourself. And yes, 100%. I had to learn that during the pandemic. Like, I was always working out and taking good care of myself. And then I started working at home instead. And the workouts were easier and quicker, and I kind of liked that because it saved me time. Mm-hmm. And then a year goes by, and then more stressors started coming into my life. And then I found myself snapping. Mm. Just snapping for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, this little thing didn't work out, and I'm flipping the fuck out. And I remember the day where I was like, go back to the gym, Mike.
Yeah.
Go back to the gym. Do your sauna again. Mm-hmm. Do those cold dip stuff that you were doing before. And as soon as I came back, everything snapped right back into place.
Because you were actually self-caring. You were actually going back within, and you were going within yourself instead of doing everything outside. You know, because people think everything's outside. It's all inside.
It is.
It's an inside game.
Yeah.
Completely. So your environment completely shows up as to how you monitor the inside game.
How did you get rid of the mold thing?
The what?
The mold.
That was over time, really just purifying the air anywhere that I was. I probably still have elements of it within my body, but I changed my diet. I changed my vitamins. I changed everything that I was putting in my body, and then realigned my body, did energy work on my body. So my body's become a lot lighter from the energy work. So the mold was like a trigger to get me to knock down. So it just like, it was almost like these things happened to just knock me out. So I don't know if I'm fully recovered from the mold. I don't know if it's something that you fully ever recover from, but it definitely took me out of the game during like a 10-year period. So I don't know. I just think it's purifying your diet and purifying what you're putting in and what air you're breathing. And because anytime I come anywhere near mold, which is like I had to go live at my parents' house before we renovated and the bathroom had a leak. And I was like, I can't stay. I mean, it was like there was nowhere I could stay.
Yeah.
You know, like even when I was sick, I was in the room.
Especially places like New Jersey or Detroit, where it's like really wet and you get a lot of floods and all kinds of shit.
Yeah. And so really monitoring my space. And that comes with self-value, you know, because that was when I wasn't valuing myself. You know, that's why it all comes back to, that's why I'm saying the precursor of every sickness is how you feel about yourself. So if you love yourself and you're going to do everything you can to make sure that you're taking care of yourself.
Sure.
But if you don't, everything's going to show up that doesn't. It's not even that you mean for it to show up.
Right.
You're going to end up in an environment that has moldy air.
Yeah.
You know, because like I was living with a bunch of girls in college, and the problem was there was a garage room that was reconverted into this really cool room, but it was all sealed. And so there was no
ventilation.
Flow. No ventilation, no flow going in and out. And there was this moldy air conditioning unit, but it was like this brand new room. And then not only that, we had like a carpet, and carpet like offs all this. Well, it offs all of this, all these chemicals. So I was just sitting in a chemical hot box. And so for that whole year, and the person who lived in there after me, I honestly don't think if he's still alive. I don't even know if he's still alive, because I saw him years later, because he took the room after me, and I saw him years later, and he was like,
he looked like death.
He looked like death.
Jesus.
And I was like, and still didn't get it fully, you know?
At like, the time, you still didn't get it, right?
It was, this is all like,
this is in retrospect.
This is all research later, because during that time, I was just trying to survive. And I was going from doctor to doctor to doctor. And my mom was like taking me to so many doctors, and she's like, are you going to be okay? And I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I was like, no.
So what was it that in your journey, mm-hmm. out of all the things that you learned, what was the biggest lesson that you learned? Or like, what is the technique that you learned that helped you the most? Because it seems like you learned so many different.
There's a lot. It was almost like I was being guided through the
different. It's like you were doing a cocktail of things.
Exactly. It was almost like where the guidance was pulling me. Once I stopped trying to control everything and allowed the information to come in, then all of a sudden all these like guru conscious people started showing up. Like I started going on all these awake events,
retreats
I was asked to do a book tour with my best friend's uncle, who happened to be one of the top mindful psychologists in San Francisco. And that, you know, that was part of the journey. One of my friends who was a flight attendant listened to Wayne Dyer. I don't know if you're familiar with Wayne Dyer, but he's just amazing. And you know, just before my mom died, she gave me this iPad that I started listening to, and it was all about the power of intention and changing your thoughts and how to like live into the world. So once I started changing my thoughts, it was like, okay, now I'm gonna look for the modalities to help me. And it was just through this random research that was coming in. And one of the magical moments was, my son was right after my mom passed, he went through a lot of trauma with her passing, and we found the psychologist, because I was trying to get him to go to school, and he wouldn't go to school, and I was just breaking down. And we find the psychologist, and it was really for him, but it ended up being for me. And it was funny, because he looked at me like, so once we take care of this kid, and he put like a square around me, what are we gonna do about, you know? And my first reaction as a mom is, it doesn't matter about me, we need to help him, like forget me. He needs to be helped.
Which is the wrong answer.
That's what we all do. And the thing is that if I took care of me, he would be taken care of.
Sure.
And the reason he was melting down is because I was a lunatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
He was feeling your energy.
Completely.
Whether he knew it or not.
No, that's how. So as soon as I started healing, and he had this major shift with this technique called neuro-emotional technique. And it's basically your body holds energy from traumas throughout your lifetime. And so there's things that you remember and don't remember because your conscious kind of puts it into the background to protect you. Like, and these are like big traumas throughout your life.
Sure.
And your body becomes formed around the traumas that were created during your life. So I'll give you, for instance, if you were somebody who was abandoned as a kid, you a lot of times hold yourself like this because you're protecting this heart, you're protecting your heart chakra, and your body will contort because you're literally trying to go, you're like kind of create an energy field like this, like stay away from me kind of thing. Mm. And the more you get rid of the traumas that taught you that love is scary and that love is going to hurt you, and the more you release all that stuff, the more this becomes open and you're like this. And I actually worked on my son with that whole thing, and I used to be like that. Yeah.
I used to be like this,
and you just kind of protect. Tense. Yeah, and you protect yourself.
Sure.
And don't go here.
But it's also insecurity. Yeah,
but that's what it is. It's not about, you know, it's really not about insecurity. We come into the world like, what is happening? And things are great. And then all of a sudden the world goes bang, bang, bang.
Sure.
And knocks you into becoming what you become.
Yeah.
And so when they say, oh, I have this problem in my leg, or I have this problem, it all comes back to like these traumas. So I started doing this neuro-emotional technique, and there was another technique called emotion codes, which people can look up on the internet using magnets. And it's basically asking the body what happened, when it happened, and then all of a sudden the energy comes, you can feel the energy come to the surface, and you do like a banging technique, or you do a magnet technique, and it releases it out of the body. And your
it
body
seems woo woo.
It totally it seems woo woo. And this is the thing.
But
like,
it isn't.
Like, we're doing such a short interview, but it's like I could scientifically show you like how it actually, like, because your body just feels lighter, and lighter and lighter.
You
and
don't think it's a placebo effect?
No.
Like how religion can sort of like make you feel like you're in tune with something. I remember when I was growing up Muslim, whenever we would pray, there would be this moment after the prayer where you just felt this
sense of
energy. It's like I did something good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I practiced gratitude for however long this little session was. Right.
Yeah.
Placebo effect, or you think it's actually really internal and within the energy?
Everything's energy.
Yeah, it's true.
Everything is energy.
I believe
it's like we really have this thing about if we don't see it, it doesn't exist, and it's baloney. And I come across this conversation all the time about like woo woo or whatever. It's kind of like the thing we were talking about, laughter. You know, the reason I'm in this, the reason I came back into this business is because laughter is so incredibly healing. Mm. And I watch people in the showroom transform from the minute they walk in the door without even knowing it. And the thing is, they transform so well because nobody's telling them, oh, this is going to make you transform. They're allowing it. You know, I mean, even some of this work, it's hard because people are like, well, I don't need to be fixed, or nothing's wrong with me, or this energy stuff is blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, you know, so that's why I love laughter, because it's kind of like people come into the comedy club. I stand in the back of the room and they're just like, and I can see the constriction and the stress on these, like in these people's bodies. Mm-hmm. And they walk in, they go through a show and come out and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry for being such a jerk. Yeah. I mean, I improv was all the time. I mean, people would just come in losing their minds, and then they'd be like, I'm so sorry.
You can definitely see that in the people.
Absolutely,
for sure.
See it.
Especially with the work that you've been doing. You probably can see.
I can see it.
In their gait.
Yep. Everything.
You can see all kinds of stuff. And then. Yep. Afterwards, seeing that release that they had.
It's a difference between a closed energy and an open energy.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you are before sex and after sex.
Exactly.
Same way.
I'm telling you.
I'm not a starfish.
That's funny.
You know?
The world is mine. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a good analogy for somebody to get that, you know, or after having that gratitude session, because the gratitude session, the reason that it works so well is that you're telling yourself you're abundant. You're telling yourself that you're connected to all that which created you.
But you're also being grateful.
Yes.
You're counting your blessings.
Yes.
That's the beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Like, I think the one thing that I, was very interesting is my mom, raised me a little different in Islam.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I noticed, I talked to a lot of other Muslims.
Yeah.
And they all had different views. So like when we did Ramadan, you know, some of my Lebanese friends were like, oh, we do it because God and pride and this and that. And I was like, huh. My mom always told me we did Ramadan so that we knew and we can empathize with poor people. So that we knew what poor people were going through.
Oh. Okay.
Because that's really what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be showing solidarity with people who have less. And then the good thing is, like, my mom would always remind me, he's like, you get to eat when the sun goes down, but just remember other people's sun goes down, they still don't eat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really puts into the view of how grateful, right? And that I think what my mom is, I just realized like not too long ago, was she only told me to go pray to God when good things happened.
Okay.
So if something good happened, I got like this, I started working on TV, started producing, I got that gig or whatever. Yeah. That's when my mom would go pray. Tell God.
That's actually a great.
Tell God thank you. Tell God thank you. Go. She would make me go in the room. Go.
That's actually a really good thing that she gave you. You know why? Because you actually focused in on the essence of that in the space of the blessing. Because a lot of times we're always asking for this.
Yes.
And that's, you know what? Asking and wanting, it means you don't have. So you're in scarcity. So that's another whole discussion about abundance versus scarcity.
Sure.
You know, one of the things that I've been teaching, you know, all the kids that are all the young ones that are working for me is these lessons in abundance. Like and you know, when they're making money and how they feel about themselves and when they're being tipped and how everything doesn't revolve around it and what space they're in when they're serving or when they're bartending. And it's so, it's changing. Like, it's really changing the way they're looking at it. You know,
have you heard of the 5-minute journal?
Give me a, probably.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's, what is it? It's awesome. It's, I'm going to go back to using it,
sure.
But you can get the book version, but I got the digital version that sends it to my Evernote every morning.
Yeah.
And every day, every morning, you have to answer questions.
Okay.
What are you grateful for? Three things that you are grateful for.
Yeah.
Three things you want to accomplish today.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then a daily, what's that term? Whatever. What do you call that?
What?
I forgot. Were you like, say something about yourself.
Oh,
affirmations.
Yeah.
Daily affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the end of the day, it'll ask you what three great things happened today. Mm-hmm. What three amazing things happened today?
Yeah.
What three things could have went better today?
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And what three things are you grateful for today?
Okay.
Right. That exercise was so great because there was times in my life where I literally had nothing to be grateful for.
Yeah. I know that.
And then when you wake up that morning and you got to do that exercise and that thing goes, what are you grateful for? I remember sitting there for so long. I was just so mad. I was not in a good place.
Oh, yeah.
I was just angry at the world. You know, nothing was going my way.
Yeah.
And then I literally was like, my mom laughed today.
Aw.
You know, and it was like those little things.
Teeny. Because it knocks you out of the darkness.
And it was just like, my mom is healthy. And I was just like, and then it was just like, because she just got out of the hospital. And then it was just like, my cat is cute. You know? Then it was like so funny. Like it thrusted me out of that to make me realize there's got to be things that I can like point to.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's where, I think prayer was, it's supposed to be. You don't want to be, if there's a God, you don't want to be that guy that always called God when you need something. Right.
It'd
be nice to be like, hey, thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, it's even bigger than that because it's kind of like, and this goes back to like what we talked about the other day about being versus doing, because it's really about already knowing that God loves you and you're in the favor of all that is, right? And everything that we perceive to be bad is just our perception. Right? Because something could happen and that could be the best thing that happens to you. And we just have this, like, we lock down into the darkness because we are like, this is wrong or this is bad. And we judge. So judgment is what causes all of that, that darkness and that heaviness because we think it should be another way. So when you're in gratitude, you're actually going, I love it the way it is. And I'm so like happy and what else is possible. Do you know what I'm saying? So then you just open this and then things start opening up. So when I was in the same place as you in this, like after my mom died in this, like I call it the dark night of the soul. I mean, nothing. I couldn't even find, you know, I'm writing a book right now about laughter and healing and it's called Chasing Laughter. And it is about me losing I lost my complete connection to laughter after my mom passed. It was like, it couldn't even find its way in. It was like the light couldn't find its way in. So I had to go through that really deep, dark space for a while in order to go through it and come out. Because it's like, we're always trying to avoid that space. We're always trying to avoid that deep sadness or that deep, like people live like kind of on the cusp of it all the time.
Sure.
And my suggestion is dive into that pool. Sure. Go into the darkness, take a little swim around and realize it is not that what you think it is. Because it's your judgment on what's showing up that causes it to be the darkness. Because you're allowed to cry. You're allowed to grieve.
No, I'm not.
Like I'm saying, most guys, and I'm telling you. I have a lot of people like make jokes. They're like, don't sit next to Heather. She's going to make you cry. And I'm like, yes, I am. Because I'm telling you, but I like when I'm flying, like someone in the jump seat, oh, they're always bawling. It's hysterical. It's almost funny now because I'm like crying and laughing is the exact same.
Yeah.
It's almost the exact same energy.
It's almost the same.
And all it's doing is releasing energy that's pent up.
Amen.
So like pent up energy, when you cry it, like when you ugly cry it out, and all it's doing is turning into salt and water. And we've grown up with the perception that crying means you're weak, which is
so stupid.
Yeah. So now we've got all these people that are like a boiling pot of emotions that is like this, right? And it's like, bust that. You know, I'm always like, I almost get angry with people like, look, cry it out. Like, stop judging yourself with the stupid crying, you know? And then you ever cry when you were a kid and you literally end up crying? You know, and you're just like, and you're like, what the hell just happened? But you don't remember. And then all of a sudden you're off to go play in the next thing because you just cried whatever the heck just happened out. And now you're on to the next.
A story that I have is when I got out of the Marine Corps, I fell into a really deep depression going through a culture shock, right? Yeah. I'll spare you the details. Just big culture shock.
Sure, sure, sure.
Family problems, everything compounding, getting fat, just not. And I was working in a Detroit Diesel as a mechanic working in the engineering department. And we would have to move these heavy blocks and like, you know, tighten bolts down and stuff. And I had this girlfriend that I was dating. We're still friends now, which is nice. This is like years ago, years ago. Yeah. We were still friends. We were so young. Yeah. But she had a traumatized life and it was hard dating her. She was like kind of verbally abusive and this, that, and it was getting in my head and I was very depressed.
Yeah.
And I remember like, it was that moment when I realized I had to break up with her, but it hurt really bad with everything else that was going on.
Yeah.
And I remember I was working on this engine block, and it was so hard because I was so weak. And then I ended up couldn't handle it. And I went in the bathroom and I cried my eyes out for like 15 minutes because I knew I was going to break up with her.
Awesome.
And then as soon as I got done with that, I remember I came back to that engine block and it was no longer heavy.
Yeah.
It was so weird. I remember I was only like 22 at the time.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I was like, what?
Yeah. When you're not in alignment.
It didn't make sense to me.
When you're not in alignment or open, energy can't flow through you.
Yeah.
Like, but
this goes back to you saying crying makes you stronger.
Huge.
You know?
Huge. Because it shifts energy. So that's another way to shift energy. Like I was telling you about neuroemotional technique and emotion codes. That's a way to like pinpoint and pull it up. But crying is another way to shift it. It's almost like you're offing, you're releasing it out of your body.
How about people who cry too much though?
That's a whole different thing.
Right? They're weaponizing it, aren't they?
No, that's a different kind of thing. And that's something that they need to heal that. Because that's something they used either as a kid to get manipulated or something. So there's different. Crying when you're doing it authentically is just like this emotion comes up, you bawl, or you could just cry for a few and then you're done and then you move on. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it just kind of like moves, you know, crying and weeping as in something that's like, you know, like I need to get something I'm going to do. That's a whole different, that's like a manipulatory. Yeah. That's just, yeah.
We're already getting,
are we already?
Sorry. This is why I'm telling you, like these things.
That was like an hour. I was like, what are we going to chat about for an hour?
We actually got four people watching right now. I'm like really surprised. I can't believe that.
Hi, four people.
Oh yeah. I got even my buddy from the Marine Corps is here right now.
Sweet.
And, but great show. They love it. Before we go, I want you to explain to me what you explained to me the other night.
Okay.
There was a couple of things that you said.
Mm-hmm.
One was that the first night that we met that made me wake up and think about it.
Yeah.
We went from a place of doing where we need to be in a place of being.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Did I kind of say that right?
Yeah. So
and then also your that awesome analogy that you had for us being different fractals of God.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was amazing. It was just like really, really cool.
And you know what's cool is they're both connected. So both things that you're talking about are connected. So we had a conversation about how, because we went into like masculine and feminine and what it meant to be, you know, a man in the world. And like you said something about becoming obsolete, right?
Oh,
as
yeah,
a man, how, right? You're like, yeah.
Men
like,
we're losing our utility.
Yeah, we don't have to like make.
We don't have to fight lions or anything anymore.
We don't have to get the meat, bring that. We go to Ralph's.
Let's go to the
whatever,
Ralph's, yeah. Look, be a man.
Yeah, I was like, I got the steak. I brought it home. Yeah, exactly.
Sat in the car and drove here.
I feel so accomplished, right?
Air conditioning.
Yeah, right. So the thing is that we've gone from a place of doing to a place of being. And it goes back to the other analogy that you were talking about being, I'll go a little more into that first. So we've always assessed, like even men more than women, our value and our worth as in what we do, as in what we accomplish about what, you know, how much money we make, I mean, how much status we have, all this nonsense, right?
Sure.
The truth is you come into the world already worth all of it, already. Like you come into this world, this miraculous, incredible being that's supposed to bring something to the world, right? And we have this lie that we have to get the outward accolade in order to know who we are or in order to know like what, you know. The truth is, it's about the inner game. It's about what gifts am I bringing to the world? And actually really going inside and saying, this is what I want to bring to the world. And we were also talking about how when you do that, you get more accolades as to when you actually are looking for accolades. So like if you're doing and you're like, look at what I accomplished and look at how famous I am or look at whatever, less people accolade you than when you are being. So when you are actually being your magnificence and you're being that in the world and you're not trying or you're not looking for the outward accolade and you're just living the true nature of who you are and working with so many celebrities, I was telling you, I've seen so much of this and the people that are more famous are the ones that don't give a crap about what anyone else thinks and they're going by their inner guidance and they're going by this thing that they know inside of them that they're supposed to bring to the world and they don't care what you say. Like you could come up and be like, that sucks. And they're like, that's nice. And then they just keep going, you know? But that's kind of like what is more magnificent. That's really what it's about.
Being.
It's being. It's actually being into the world. It's like when you're doing, you're trying.
It's almost like when you're doing stand-up and you are in your head and you're not connecting to the audience.
Yep.
And now you're just doing your jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing them. You're
not being in them.
There's no heart in there.
Yeah. So and when you're in the flow, you're
it's almost like no one could be, and no one could be in the room. And nobody could be in the room.
Nobody could be in the room.
Yeah. And you're bringing, and it's like a musician.
And it's almost like you become one with the room.
Yeah.
The room becomes one with you.
Because they're.
The jokes are the same. The jokes are the same.
But it's different.
But that energy was different.
It's totally. Because you're in the flow of your true self and your true magnificence, you know, your true essence. It's kind of like
so deep.
Yeah,
man.
Sorry.
So, it's great. I loved it. I woke up going, man, we went from to a place. And it's almost like this is where humanity's been evolving.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, this is the
We went from these monkeys that were only just doing. Mm-hmm. And now we're like being things.
That's what consciousness is. That's what evolution is.
Going
that's
to what, space and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different paradigm now. It's a different. It's time to know who we truly are and to really realize it into existence. You know, because it's like we're all a gift. Everybody's a gift, but in a different way. And this goes back to that blanket analogy that you wanted me to say. And basically, the way that I look at everyone in the world is kind of like Creator coming down. So like say if it was sunshine coming through a blanket with there's a ton of holes underneath the blanket, and it's that which created you shining down through all these individual fractals or holes is every individual in the world. And so when we say someone else is wrong, that's the silliest thing, or they're not okay because of their color or their creed or their or what they believe in or whatever, you know, whatever you want to put them in a box as. That's a lie. They're this beautiful fractal made exactly the way they were supposed to be made. And you are too, but it doesn't mean you have to be them or they have to be you. It means that you're this just gorgeous light ray from a kaleidoscope or tapestry that is that which created you.
From the main source.
Yeah. It's like your living source through you.
That's like that whole thing where people talk about like, you know, that they're like, you know, is there a God? Mm-hmm. And people be like, yeah, you're God.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and
like
not
you're
in an ego
an
way.
Extension.
Yes.
You're an extension. It's almost as if God is like experiencing this world through so many different versions of itself. You know? But I thought that analogy of the source light
coming
through and then being split into these little rays and fractals, and then that's what we are.
That's what we are. And we're the essence of God in different experience and different manifestations and different things that it's almost like God gets to experience itself through every single. And you even said that and I just got the chills. So that's God gets to experience himself, herself, themselves through all of humanity and through all of trees and earth and, you know, just all these different experiences. And we want to go, you're wrong and you're bad.
I wish
and you're
we had
not
another
like
hour right now. I'm so mad.
But it's a good thing to end on. It's a good thing to end on.
It's kind of like, I don't know, do you know Ray Kurzweil?
No.
Ray Kurzweil is a futurist.
Okay.
He's a guy who predicts the future of technology. He's been spot on since 1979 or something.
That's pretty cool.
In 1979, he made a prediction that said a computer will be smart enough by 1997 to beat a chess champion. And everyone laughed at him, and it happened a year earlier.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
And then when that happened, all of a sudden, everyone started taking him seriously. Mm-hmm. He has this prediction that technology is going to get to a point where human beings in the future are going to merge consciousness into one bulk conscious being. Mm-hmm. And at the end of this documentary, the one guy asked him, do you believe in God? And he goes, I do. He's just not here yet.
Interesting.
Fascinating. Like, so his idea is that we've come from that main source.
We are that though.
Right.
Like I believe. No. And like I never want
to
tell
anybody. But we're going to go back to that source.
Exactly.
But we're going to manifest it in a weird evolutionary way.
That's why when people take so seriously where they are on the ladder or where they are in the world, it's like, be here now in your essence, living your magnificence on the ground, in action, in the world, and be present. And, you know, everyone's checked out. They're in the future. They're in the past. They're not in the now. Be present. See the magic that's happened. Experience your awesome whatever is going to happen, like this whole podcast. I wasn't anticipating doing this, so
let's end it on that. That
I know,
is freaking
perfect.
Awesome, guys. She's amazing. If you can't get to her state of mind, do what I do, mushrooms. Let's do it. Do it in Indonesia, especially full moon beach party.
Oh my God.
Bali. That's right where on. I met God, and it's a woman. Okay.
Awesome.
Love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. I'm glad you guys actually came out this late. Sorry I wasn't been able to engage with the comments, but I do got to get going real soon. You guys are the best. This Friday, I'm doing a solo podcast for Friday at 2 p.m. Since I didn't do one this week, I'll do it Friday. I'll see you guys next time. Follow Heather at, oh, I didn't have her.
Don't even worry about it. Somebody hijacked my Facebook and I have there to put is. Another one.
Heather Williams, heather.c.williams.
Oh, yeah. Is on that Instagram. That's fine.
On Instagram, yeah.
Yep.
All right, guys. Love you. Peace out.
Bye.
Public Yemeni number one.